Welcome to the podcast series, Blindingly Obvious. My name is Minnie Baragwanath, and this series is based on my book by the same name. Blindingly Obvious is my story. It is a candid and deeply personal story about my life and work as a blind woman, social entrepreneur, and innovator. I wrote it in order to share my experience of blindness with others, and in the hope that it might raise awareness and invite others to actively create a more accessible future, one that is full of possibility. A wonderful voiceover artist and now friend of mine, Romy Hooper, has narrated my full book, all 24 chapters. I do so hope you enjoy listening. It is an absolute pleasure to be able to share it with you.
19. To be or not to be. On the 17th of January 2011, I stepped into Be Accessible's new office, generously hosted by AUT in the middle of Auckland's CBD. AUT, the Auckland District Health Board, ADHB, and Auckland Council had each committed some seed funding, as well as the office space at AUT, to help get us up on our feet. They had all been part of the Step Up Auckland research we had carried out a couple of years earlier, and we're now all invested in bringing the key recommendations to life. It was a very makeshift operation to start with, but we now had the commitment and backing of these large and influential organisations as we set about our incredible mission to advance access. How fabulous. I had left my job with the council just before Christmas in 2010, and then almost immediately jumped on a plane to head off to Vietnam. A friend of mine was going back to her homeland to retrace her traumatic escape from her precious country in the 1970s as a boat refugee. I had offered to come with her on this extraordinary journey, along with her brother, sister-in-law, two-year-old niece, and a friend's teenage son, who was filming the entire adventure. Going to Vietnam in this way was an incredible way to make the transition from the end of my 10 years with council and to mark the start of the next 10 years. Setting up and running Be Accessible would be the greatest roller coaster ride of my life. It was not what you call a relaxing trip. How could it be, given the fact that we were going to retrace where my friend's family had to flee their home, where they'd been attacked by pirates, been washed up on an island off Malaysia, and then been held for months on end in a very primitive refugee camp? However, it was extraordinary and a huge privilege to be a part of. One of the most memorable things we did on that trip was visit the Laughing Buddha in the middle of Vietnam. As I've described, my name as a wee baby was in fact Minnie Haha. I was given that name as a result of the fact I giggled a lot. Well, perhaps it was the power of suggestion. Perhaps the Laughing Buddha really is magical and the embodiment of joyful energy. But whatever it was, I do not think I have ever laughed as much as I did that day. My friend and I each climbed onto the back of our own individual small motorbikes, with our separate guides in front driving, as we set off across the uneven ground over the open fields towards the wonderful ebullient Buddha. I lost it. For some reason, perhaps a build-up of all the tension we'd been feeling around this trip and what it represented, perhaps the release of 10 years of being rather miserable in my work. Well, whatever the reasons, I could not stop laughing. Now, I do have a bit of a habit of getting hysterically giggly in Buddhist settings. I used to get horrendously giggly, sometimes to the point I had to leave the shrine room when I went on meditation retreats. So this was a familiar response. This time, the giggling was unbelievably contagious. Within seconds, my driver, my friend, her driver, and the cameraman were all paralytic with laughter. We had to stop and get off the motorbikes because we were all about to fall off if we did not. How utterly perfect. What better way to experience the glory, the compassion, and the utter delight of the incredible Laughing Buddha. However, sadly, in stark contrast, I was shocked by the harsh, awful reality of most people living with disability in Vietnam. Many, of course, were victims of the Vietnam War some years earlier. While many people lived a hand-to-mouth existence, it was brutally apparent that if you happened to experience a disability, your life would most likely be unbelievably difficult. The best option, or perhaps often the only option, for many was to become beggars. I saw people dragging themselves across roads because their lower limbs were paralyzed and they did not have a wheelchair. I saw blind people begging, and people with leprosy and all kinds of other impairments just cast aside on the crowded, dusty streets. I felt a powerful, growing sense of my work and my purpose. I felt even more sure that I had to head home and really start my work for real. I have always had extremely vivid dreams throughout my life, and it was on this trip that I recall one in particular. In my dream, I was standing on the southernmost tip of Aotearoa, looking far out to sea. As I stood there, feeling the immense power of the sea and the wind, a group of dolphins appeared before me. At that moment, I knew I had to return home. I knew I had to head back to Aotearoa and begin my work with B. I felt deeply called by the spirits of the land and sea. To this day, I can still see this image in my mind's eye and feel the calling in my heart and soul. I had been on a meditation retreat a year earlier that had had a similar effect on me. During one very memorable meditation, I had experienced the sense of being a fish. I was a brightly colored fish, swimming in glorious technicolored water filled with shafts of light from the sun's rays above. In this meditation, this vision, if you like, I realized something profound. I realized I was, in a sense, a fish. And instead of living my life as a fish, as who I truly was, I had been functioning as a fish out of water, a fish on land. I had learnt how to breathe through my gills on land and how to walk upright on my fins. But why was I doing this? Why did I not accept who I was and become fully fish? What would happen if I were to stop trying to fit in and instead surrender and start to swim freely in pools of liquid along with all the other glorious technicolored fish? I realized that this is what lay at the heart of B. I wanted to create a world where everyone could just be themselves, and I wanted to support the creation of just such a world, where no one felt they had to pretend to be something they were not. I did not know this at the time, but I now know that the fish is also a very important symbol in Christianity. And of course, the evolutionists amongst us know that life began in the oceans. How fascinating, wonderful, and yes, utterly magical. So one of the first things I wanted us to get for our new office at AUT was a fish tank. I wanted us to have the embodiment of B's spirit in our office. My assistant at the time quite rightly suggested that perhaps we should start by acquiring some desks, chairs, and computer equipment, and look to get a fish a bit further down the track. Sadly, we never did acquire a fish tank, but to this day, I do have a gorgeous, albeit plastic, bright orange goldfish that sits on my computer as a daily reminder of what my work is actually all about. Perhaps we will get that fish tank one day. Or better still, become it. Becoming a chief executive officer overnight after my time with council took some getting used to. In fact, I have to admit that for the first 12 months or so, I tended to giggle nervously every time I had to introduce myself as the CEO. Can you imagine what a radical change it was for me going from being in a slot at the bottom of a very large hierarchy, with a tiny budget and no staff to support me, or for me to manage, to suddenly having such responsibility and opportunity available to me? It was a massive shock to the system, but it was one I was absolutely up for and embracing with both hands. This was to be an enormous learning curve and a dream come true all at once. Now for the B people. I'm not sure if words exist to do this group of brave pioneers justice. The founding B team were, and still are, the most remarkable group of people. They were, without a doubt, the A team. Some B humour there. Our team was made up of the incredible Kui Jing Wong, Leslie Slade, Philip Patston, Michelle Jurgens, Edith Horvath, Janelle Kex, and Lauren Fethany, the incomparable Megan Barclay, Kylie Shirtliff, and Ruda Al-Salim were to join us a few months later. Our B board was made up of the amazing John Allen as chair, my mentor, Mark Bagshaw, Mary Jane Rivers from Inspiring Communities, and Ross Brereton, CEO of the Disabled Persons Assembly, DPA. It was essential that we had both a team and a board who represented the cross-sector approach I so believed in. And that is exactly what we had back then and right throughout Bee's life. We had people with a deep personal knowledge of access, of community, of government, and of the private sector. This was essential to our work. At the end of 2010, before I had left for Vietnam, I'd been invited to come and present the Bee Accessible concept to the main advocacy organisation, DPA, at their national AGM in Invercargill. My presentation was well received at the time, and there was unanimous support by DPA's membership to endorse our initiative. I also wanted to further demonstrate our deep commitment to working together at that time by inviting the CEO of DPA, Ross, onto our board, which we did. However, thanks in part to the utterly devastating and far-reaching effects of the Christchurch earthquake some months later in 2011, and as a result of some leadership changes within DPA, this important relationship would sadly soon start to disintegrate. At the beginning of Bee, money was very tight. We had our initial seed funding from our three founding partner organisations, and we had been incredibly lucky to also attract some very timely government funding through a newly established department in the Ministry of Social Development. But we were in serious startup mode, and therefore had nowhere near enough money to do what we felt was needed to properly establish Bee. Incredibly, it soon turned out the stars were starting to align in the most spectacular way, and the money gods, or perhaps the laughing Buddha, were now in fact shining on us after all. The first program we had to get off the ground was our brand new leadership program called Bee Leadership. The remarkable team to design and run this program were Leslie Slade and Philip Patston, with amazing support from Michelle Juergens. We encountered the most extraordinary synchronicity when we looked to start this initiative. At exactly the moment we needed funding, a new disability leadership fund became available through an organisation called Te Pō. This funding would enable us to get the program up and running and see us through to the middle of the year, to June 2011. What would happen after that was anyone's guess, but we just knew we had to get started and then hope, and yes, pray, for the rest of the funding to come in, as we had designed a year-long program. On a day in February 2011, Leslie, Philip, Michelle and I stood at the front of a large meeting room overlooking the glorious Pacific Ocean and welcomed the first cohort of Bee leaders to the inaugural program at a retreat centre just north of Auckland. We welcomed 20 brave, interesting and talented access leaders from right across Aotearoa to the program. They were aged from 19 to 70 years old. We had been absolutely inundated by applications when we sent out the call for participants only a few weeks earlier. You would not believe the tight time frame we were operating within to get ready to deliver this amazing program. It is an absolute testimony to what is possible when a group of people deeply share a vision, are all motivated by the same objectives, and believe anything is possible, and then wholeheartedly commit. We had pulled off something extraordinary. And it was just the beginning. The second work stream we had to start working on was called Bee Welcome. This was our program to provide support for the 2011 Rugby World Cup. All of the intellectual property we had created at Council had been deposited with our new charitable trust, so we were continuing to advance much of the work we had started while I was at Council. This included the design and development of our Bee Ready Business Toolkit, which was full of tips and advice for local businesses on how to ensure they were providing world-class accessible experiences to their access customers. We were also working on a map of Auckland CBD, showing all the accessible routes to the key RWC facilities and event locations around the city. Perhaps most importantly, we were developing a bold and comprehensive new assessment program for reviewing the accessibility of major venues, hotels, sports arenas, and so on. An amazing woman named Edith Horvath led this workstream. Edith ran an ambitious process in which we engaged with multiple disability agencies and specialists to come up with a radical and, as it turned out, deeply disruptive way to assess businesses in the 21st century. Perhaps most critical was the deep partnership we formed with the Independent Living Service, or ILS. Their team of Tony, Peter, and Julianne, all barrier-free trained assessors, would become our Be Welcome design partners and our frontline team to approach and work with businesses. While each of our programs were to prove radical and disruptive, the work we had underway for Be Welcome probably proved to be the most controversial. It is fascinating to look back, because what we created 12 or more years ago in 2011, along with our friends at ILS and other access agencies, is still at the cutting edge of such programs internationally. The last couple of years of COVID and the impact this global pandemic has had on how we live and work has forced many of us online and away from the physical environment. Our Be Welcome approach has been proven to be even more ahead of its time. My friend and former mayor of Waitakere City Council, Sir Bob Harvey, once said, "It is wrong to be right too soon." And I now know what he means. After my 10 years in council, I had become very aware that most people and businesses did not understand accessibility. And they also did not often know where to start with providing it in their organisations. Most people wanted to do the right thing, but just did not know how. So one of the guiding principles for all of our work at Be was to make access accessible to everyone. We wanted to make it possible for anyone who wanted or needed access advice to be able to get the information and support they needed. I had also observed that each disability agency felt that the access needs for their particular community, whether for people who were blind, deaf, wheelchair users, or whatever, was the most important. Each would approach businesses individually, asking them to put in place appropriate measures. This often left the businesses unsure what to do first or what to prioritise. With Be Welcome, we wanted to create an assessment program that was pan-impairment, if you like a GP, as opposed to a medical specialist, to use that metaphor. We wanted to become a one-stop shop for access advice. We also wanted to be seen as highly approachable and able to provide outstanding professional customer service. We had to deeply understand just what our customers needed. This also meant that while we were to provide assessments of organisations and spaces, we were definitely not auditors. It was essential we were framed up as walking alongside our customers, walking with them, rather than looking to a punitive model. We approached our customers from a place of goodwill, assuming that they wanted to do what was right, but just needed support to do this. For this reason, we called our team of assessors Be Welcome Coaches. However, this generous-spirited approach still proved to be deeply threatening and upsetting for others in the access space. And this was to come to a head at our spectacular launch event later that year. The third string to our Be Bow was our marketing and communications plan, headed up by the unbelievably talented Kuijing Wong. With our wonderful new brand as inspiration, and providing our North, Q and her team, including her talented sister Kui Lai, set about creating the most wonderful brand collateral, website and marketing brochures. Perhaps one of the most powerful pieces of branding collateral we produced were our business cards. They contained our names and contact details in both print and braille. Pretty much the only other organisation at the time to do this was the RNZFB, and people loved it. Every time we handed someone a card, it made them suddenly stop and think, as their fingers felt the tiny lumps of braille. A light would go on, and they would understand access at an entirely new level. Pure gold. Where Q and her team really shone was with our unbelievable official launch event on the 6th of May 2011. This spectacular event was hosted by the Auckland Museum in their gracious and elegant marble foyer. The dress code for that night, and for all future events, and which often baffled people, was glamorous and authentic. The evening was hosted by two of our gorgeous Be Leadership participants for that year, Matt Frost and Ursula Time Beecroft. They were absolutely fabulous. Funny, sincere, authentic, and the absolute embodiment of what Bee Accessibility was all about. The entire Bee team, board and all our key partners, supporters and family, were there to celebrate this remarkable occasion with us. Then the most utterly extraordinary thing happened. No one could have prepared for the game-changing announcement that was about to occur. Dame Tariana Turia, Minister for Disability Issues, had flown in from Russia that very same day. Instead of heading home to Whanganui to be with her whānau after a long and no doubt exhausting overseas work trip, she had come to be a part of our celebration, and she had a huge surprise for us all. Dame Tariana Turia announced in front of the 150 guests there that night that the government was going to fund Bee Accessible $1 million per year over 4 years to advance an accessible Aotearoa. I nearly passed out. You could have heard a pin drop. Everyone was gobsmacked. This kind of thing virtually never happened in the access space. And what's more, this was the year of the zero budget. This was a year of massive retrenchment by the national-led government and their coalition partner, the Māori Party. This was a miracle. And what made it even more spectacular is that Dame Tariana had managed to attract new and additional funding for the access sector. This was not a reallocation of funds within an already under-resourced sector. We were helping to bring more money, $4 million more in fact, as well as more visibility and more opportunity to the access community of Aotearoa. Everyone was utterly overjoyed. Or so I thought. Then an absolutely awful thing happened. At the end of the night, the CEO of one of our partner agencies came up to me. "Minnie," she said, "did you know we've been sent a letter? An organisation is threatening legal action. They're threatening to sue you and B for your assessment work with businesses." My heart broke. How could such a glorious night be utterly destroyed so quickly? How could we have posed such a threat to the status quo? Was this a sign of what was to come? Was it true that the brighter we shone, the darker the shadow would also be?
I do so hope you enjoyed listening to my book and podcast series, Blindingly Obvious. It has been an absolute privilege to be able to share this with you. Listen out for the next chapter coming soon. If you would like to purchase the entire book in audio or an array of other accessible formats, including New Zealand Sign Language, or to learn more about my work, visit my website, minnieb.co.nz. Thank you for taking the time to listen and to be with me. See you next time. With love, Minnie B.